emotion surrounding these men who are associated with this Christmas story. And if you listen closely, as we read earlier, you would notice that there was no number mentioned. I know it's traditional that they speak of "we three kings of Orient are," and we think of these three wise men who came, but the account really gives us no number. It actually began with a 5th century tradition because there were three gifts that were given, so people then thought they were three wise men or magi who gave those gifts, and yet we don't really find this in the historical account that Matthew gives. Some people have given names to these men, but it doesn't state any names here. And despite the nativity scenes provided by our modern department stores, there is no mention of camels. They just as soon could have been Arabian stallions as they could have been camels, we don't know. You don't come to a baby in a manger or a stable like you would find in your department store displays, for we read in verse 9, that after they left the king, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was, not the baby. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy, and going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother. And so we find that the wise men were not there in the stable. There was no manger there, but they met Mary in a house as Jesus was a little child who had been growing up. He may have been up to as old as 2 years old, because we find a little bit later on, if we read, that when Herod decides to destroy all of the children in Bethlehem, he destroys the children 2 years and under. And so then some of these things that we think are familiar to us and that might be part of this story really aren't. They have come about by tradition or other means. The idea that they were kings may have been derived from some verses from Psalm chapter 72, where it says, "May desert tribes bow down before him, and his enemies lick the dust. May the kings of Tarshish and of the coastlands render him tribute. May the kings of Sheba and Seba bring gifts. May all kings fall down before him and all nations serve him." So they may have been kings, but again, Matthew doesn't necessarily tell us this. In our account, they're spoken of as wise men. In the Greek, the word is magos, where we get the word magi from. It also is where you would find your traditional English word magician. They were, if you will, Oriental astrologers who practiced magic arts, probably, who sought to see the future by studying the stars and other means. If you're familiar with the account in Daniel 2, there were magicians or wise men in Daniel chapter 2 who gave counsel to King Nebuchadnezzar. But it's interesting, one thing that we do know is that when these magi came into Jerusalem, they did cause quite a stir. If you remember reading it in chapter 2 at the beginning, it says, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him.'" And then it says, "When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him." And it seems that although a baby in a manger may evoke a warm and sentimental feeling, Jesus, who has been born king, always causes quite a stir. Whether we are talking about our seasonal cup of Starbucks or talking about our local public school winter festival seasonal celebration that was once called Christmas, or a Christmas concert or play, we find that Jesus and the Christ always causes a stir. And when we think about it, this would be right. It would be right for Jesus to cause a stir, because this one who was born king of the Jews was no ordinary king. Think about some of the claims that this one made. In Mark 2, this one, Jesus, after he had grown up, claims to have authority on earth to forgive sins. In John 10, he says he has authority to lay down his life in death and then to take it back up again. At his trial, just before he was crucified, he says, "From now on, the Son of Man shall be seated at the right hand of the power of God." Or in Matthew 28, verse 18, after he is risen from the dead, he says, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." These are staggering claims. You say, well, who is this king? Who is this one who has been born? Think about it. If I came here tonight and told you that I had authority to forgive sins, or that from now on you were going to see me at the right hand of God in heaven, you would think that I had lost my mind. You know, when I think if Jesus had come in our day, the authorities would probably have sought to put him in a straitjacket and in a padded room and prescribed him some medication for saying some of these things. So whatever one thinks of this baby Jesus, about his birth, his life, his claims, cannot be ignored. Jesus' birth divides all of human history. His death and resurrection are the cornerstone beliefs of the most widespread religion in world history. The Bible, the book which speaks of him and his birth here, is the best-selling book in all of human history. So his person demands a response. C.S. Lewis, the writer of the Narnia Chronicles, once said that when one takes an honest and a close look at Jesus of Nazareth, one must respond to him in a way that he is either a liar, that he is a lunatic, or he is Lord and God. And so tonight I want to look briefly at three responses to Jesus, this king, that we see in this passage that we read earlier. And I think there are some similar responses that we might find in our world today. I want to look at three of them. First, Herod. How does Herod respond to the announcement of this king who has come? Now, Herod had been appointed by the Romans to govern over the land of Israel. He had governed there and did govern there for 37 years. And his official title given to him was King of the Jews. He was a foreigner, he was not a Jew, and so the Jewish people despised him for ruling over them. And if you are familiar at all with Herod and have read about him in history, you would find that he did not hesitate whatsoever to use whatever means were necessary to maintain his political power, his position, and his prosperity. Actually, Herod was a very paranoid man to the extreme, and he took swift action to remove all potential threats or rivals, whether they were legitimate or perceived. At different times, this Herod, documented in history, had his wife, his mother, his mother-in-law, and his three sons all killed at different times because of perceived threats to his reign. People said you were better off to be Herod's dog than one of his relatives. He was so feared. He was a paranoid man. And you can imagine then what he would have thought when these wise men, these magi, came seeking and saying, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews?" For Herod was the king of the Jews. And he wasn't just born, but had reigned for 30-some-odd years. And now these people came seeking one who had been born king of the Jews. And if you look at this text that we read earlier closely, you will see Herod's sinister mind beginning to work. For in verses 4 to 6, he begins to seek from the chief priests and the scribes to find out where is this one who has been born king. For it says here in verse 4 that he assembled all the chief priests and scribes of the people. He inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. And the chief priests and scribes then quoted from the prophet Micah, chapter 5 and verse 2, telling him that this one was to be born in Bethlehem. But Herod wasn't content to just know where this child was to be born. He must know when he was born. And so he says in verse 7, "Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And then he told them to go search diligently for the child." And he says, "Well, I want to come and worship him too." But if we read on in the story, in verse 16, we realize that Herod did not have worship in mind, but he wanted to wipe out and eliminate this child For in verse 16, later on, it says, "Then when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he became furious, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and all the region who were 2 years old and under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the Magi." So it's interesting to see that wanting to take Christ out of culture and Christmas is nothing new. It came that first Christmas. Herod wanted to eliminate this one. For Jesus as a baby might be fine, but Jesus, the one who is born king, not only of the Jews, but Lord and King, whose dominion and rule applies to every area of life and culture, is not popular among individuals like Herod who do not wish to yield the throne of their lives to him. And so today, many like Herod are hostile toward Jesus the King. But we see a second response. We see the response of the chief priests and the scribes. Herod asked the chief priests and scribes, "Where is the one, this Christ, to be born, this King?" And the scribes, knowing their Bible, knew exactly where the prophets had prophesied he was to be born. They had no trouble quoting from Micah 5 and verse 2, which says, "And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." God had given these scribes his word, and they knew that word. There were hundreds of prophecies about this coming king that they had studied from their youth. They just as easily could have answered this question about the where of the birth of the Christ as many others. Just as easily as they quoted Micah 5:2, they could have quoted Isaiah 9, verses 6 and 7, where it says, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders. And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And of the increase of his government and of peace there would be no end. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore, that the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this." Or maybe they could have quoted from Numbers in chapter 24, where it says, "I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. It shall crush the forehead of Moab and break down all the sons of Sheth, and one from Jacob will exercise dominion." And it's amazing that the one whom Balaam had seen, had prophesied about in Numbers, had now come. He said, "I see him, but not now," but this one had arrived. "I behold him, but not near," but now his time had come near. The promised king had come. And yet these men who knew their Bibles backwards and forwards, who knew the prophecies, you could imagine, why didn't they go seeking then to find out if this truly was the Christ? These Jewish religious leaders didn't find it worth their while to travel just a measly 5 miles to the north, southwest to Bethlehem to find out if this claim was true. They were indifferent. They were near to Christ, if you will, in relative proximity, but they were far to him and far away from him when it came to having an intimate relationship with this one who was born. Maybe for them it was their Jewish pride, thinking that how could some Gentile magi from the east know anything about the coming of the promised king? The one that had been promised to the Jews and given in the Jewish scriptures, maybe they thought, well, these men wouldn't be the ones to know the coming of this king. If God was going to announce the coming of the king, surely he would come to us, they might think. Or maybe they were just too busy with their religious traditions to take time to go and see if this was the promised king. It seems to me odd and very unbelievable that these men who had been given so much had so little passion to find out if he had really arrived. And there are many today who might be in the same position, many who may know the songs of Christmas. They might be able to sing, "Come and behold him born the King of angels," yet have never truly come to adore him as Christ the Lord. There might be those here tonight who can recite the words, "Joy to the world, the Lord has come," but they have never received their King. Others, like the scribes, may know and may read and may be able to quote the Bible, but they would not be able to say with Isaiah the prophet, "To us a child is born. To us a son has been given." It has never become personal. They have never come to see this King and receive him for themselves. May come to church at Christmas as a tradition, and yet the rest of the year, like the chief priests and scribes, will be indifferent to this King. So some people respond with hostility. Some people respond with indifference, but there is another response, thank God. There is the response of the Magi. These men had traveled a great distance, leaving home and family and comforts. God in his grace had given them a sign in the heavens, which the text here calls a star. Now, this was no ordinary star, but it was a special sign from God that he used to supernaturally guide these men to the place where the King had been born. He directed these Magi as God had directed the children of Israel with the pillar of fire and cloud in the wilderness. And as they came to the capital of Israel, Jerusalem, they came to the obvious place where they thought a king would be born. And they went through the city asking, "Where is this one who was born King of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him." They didn't respond with hostility. They didn't respond with indifference. They had come with a purpose, to worship the King. And although he was not to be found in Jerusalem, God in his providence used Herod, the chief priests, the scribes, and this ancient word of prophecy from Micah to guide them to the place where the child was. And God continues to do the same thing. God continues to providentially work in history to guide people to the place where they will come to know and see this King Jesus. Maybe you have come tonight and you don't know why you come, or you came because you were invited by a friend or a family member, and you think it's just another day and a time to come to church on Christmas Eve. And yet I believe that God in his providence still is seeking to guide people to come and worship his Son, our King. And notice their response. As they were guided to the place, that it says that when they saw this star again that guided them to the place where Jesus was, it says they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Not that they were just thankful, not that they were just excited, not just happy or joyful, but Matthew just piles up superlatives here. They rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And then he says when they came to the house where the Christ child was, it says, they saw the child with his mother Mary. They fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And as you read this, if you understand and know the prophecy of Isaiah in chapter 60, you will find these words very familiar, because in Isaiah 60, verse 3, it says, "Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. A multitude of camels shall cover you, the young camels of Midian and Ephah, all those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and frankincense and shall bring good news, the praises of the Lord." And the same is true today. When people come to the light of the world, the Lord Jesus Christ, we find these three things are always the things that mark those who have come to truly know who this one who was born is. We find them filled with joy, humble worship, and a desire to give costly gifts to their King. If you have come to know this King, do you remember the day when you first came to know him? It's good for us to think back and remember these things. The Apostle Paul says in Ephesians chapter 2, remember that you were at that time separated from Christ. You were alienated from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. Just as these wise men who once were far off were brought near to come and see the king whom God had given, a king whom God had given because we needed this king, one who not only came to rule over men, but came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for men and women like you and I. Jesus, who lived a perfect life, Jesus, the King who came and gave his life in substitutionary death on a Roman cross to bear the wrath of God against our sin so that we could be made right with God, that we could have peace with God, that we could not have hostility with God, but that we could be made right with him and come into a relationship with him. That in believing in this King and seeking this King, we might find peace on earth and goodwill toward men. That we would come to know, like the angels proclaim, good news of great joy that would be for all the people. I remember that time when I came to know this King. Back in 1989, I was at Trinity Western University, and when I came to know him, I remember my life. It's like my whole eyes were open to a whole different world, and as I walked out in nature and walked through the back 40 at Trinity Western University, I was so overfilled with joy that everything seemed to just be alive to me. I would thank God for the birds that were singing and the rabbits that were walking by and the trees and the beauty of it all. I was so overwhelmed with joy. I thanked him, I worshiped him, and I desired to give him my life. Maybe you are here tonight and you have not experienced this joy, have not seen the truth of this King. And I want to say that, and I pray that it would not be with hostility that you leave here toward this King or indifference, but that you would seek, like these wise men, to do whatever it takes to seek him, that no distance would be too far to travel, that no matter how much time it would take, no matter what you would have to leave behind, that you would seek him. And you will know when you have truly found him, because those who have truly found him rejoice exceedingly with great joy. They love to worship him. They humbly bow before him and yield their entire lives to this King. I pray that you would come to know him tonight and that those of us who do would spend this time together with family and friends remembering the joy of our salvation. Remember the time when we came to know him, that we would share it with others, that we would rejoice in it and worship him this Christmas season. Let's pray.